Here we go.
Great tone. Everyone can tell what it is, but how do you get it? With so many styles of music, with new gear coming out almost daily, what's the secret to great tone? Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show, where we talk about tone, what it is, and how to get it. With your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, we will talk to the creators of tone, the manufacturers, and the players, as we explore tone and the gear that gets it. And now, here are your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. Scott, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic, Jeff. Thanks for asking. So what have you been up to this week? What's new for you in the music world?
I've been editing the clips for next week's show. One of the guitarists from Incendio, Jim Stubblefield. I'm putting that all together. It's going to be a great show. And let me give a shout-out a little bit of what's coming up so everybody has an idea of what's happening in the next month. On the 6th, we have Jim Stubblefield. The 13th, Wampler Pedals. The 21st, Anthony Lucas from Eminent Speakers. And on the 27th, Nick Stubis and Alan Hines. Nick's from USC and Alan Hines from Musicians Institute. They're going to be talking about school.
Great.
So what have you been up to?
Well, I had all intentions of having a fantastic demo of the Big Muff Pi with a Tone Wicker done and ready so I could talk about that. I have half of it shot because I got a hair up my butt to go ahead and change a thermostat yesterday at my house, and it went very badly. And needless to say, about 4 or 5 hours later, after we got our air conditioning working back again, we're good to go. So this is why I am not head of engineering at any particular place. So also want to let everyone know, during the show, we do have a giveaway for the Big Muff Pi with the Tone Wicker option. You still have time to register for that, so you can go to our Facebook site or our website, www.flowguitarenthusiast.com, to register. And you will be able to register all the way up until the end of the show until you hear the actual sound of this.
Here, let me play it for you.
Rock and roll!
So when you hear that, entries are closed, and then we will be taking a short break, coming back, and we will tell you who the winner is. So make sure you go to flowguitarenthusiast.com. We also have a phone that you can call, 323-203-0815, to call and ask any questions of our guests. 323-203-0815, and we also have a live chat on our website, flowguitarenthusiast.com.
Real quick, how do they register?
You just need to like our Facebook page and then drop a quick comment on our Facebook or on our website that's about the Big Muff giveaway. So just making a quick comment, get you entered in, and that's how you'll win.
That's it.
So, okay. So let's go ahead and introduce our guests. So tonight we have Mike Matthews, which we had to do a pre-recorded interview with him to meet his schedule demands. And we also have the head of engineering at Electro-Harmonics, John Pisani. So before, let's kick off the show. Let's talk about have a clip here with Mike Matthews and talk about a little guitar friend of his from the past, and let's hear about that.
Later on, early in college, I promoted a lot of rock and roll shows in the summers, such groups as the Isley Brothers, Coasters, Drifters, Shirelles, Love and Spoonful. I even promoted a band called Curtis Knight and the Squires, who at that time their guitar player was a guy by the name of Jimmy James, who later changed his name back to Jimi Hendrix, and we became close friends.
Oh, here's the...
But I'll tell you some interesting other discussions we had.
Sure.
When it was Jimmy James. He played with a lot of groups. He played with the Isley Brothers, some other groups. In fact, I played with the Isley Brothers, too, when I promoted them. But when he was working with this guy, Curtis Knight and the Squires, this guy, Curtis Knight, he was a pimp, in the West Side. He was a gangster. He had a whole bunch of girls working the West Side of Manhattan. And Jimmy was a little scared of him. And I went up to see him at one of these gigs in Manhattan. I forget the name of the club. I think it was called the Lighthouse, but I'm not sure. And during the break, we were talking, and he was saying, "Hey, you got to get out of there." He wants to form his own group and headline the group. I said, "That's cool." I says, "But you know, you're going to have to sing, or get a singer, and then you won't be the headliner." He says, "I know, that's the problem." He says to me, "I can't sing." I said to him, "Well, Jimmy, look, if you just work at it, you can." I says, "Look at Mick Jagger and Bob Dylan. They can't sing, but they phrase great, and they keep getting better and better." I says, "You could do it." And it was real serious, and I know he took that to heart, and I think later on when he did start to sing, I think my encouragement helped him break that barrier.
So that was Mike Matthews from an earlier recorded conversation with him, and it's about a 45-minute interview that we have with him. We have a few more clips from him during the show that we'll play. But if you want to listen to that full show, it'll be available on our website and also available eventually on Electroharmonics' website. But without further ado, let's talk to John, and the head of engineering over Electroharmonics. How are you doing, John?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. So can you tell us about how you got started in working with Electroharmonics, and kind of tell us about, you know, were you always the head of engineering or how you got there?
Well, no, I wasn't always the head of engineering. I've been there for about 13 years now. And at the time that I started, there was really just a couple engineers. J.C. Morrison was really the other engineer there, and we were sort of kind of like a little team. And at that time, we had used a lot of consultants. Mike Beagle is one of the engineers that comes to mind right away. And so it just slowly developed over time, over the you know, past decade or so, that I guess my responsibilities grew.
So with being there at Electroharmonics, so there's just a wide variety of history. I mean, you know, one thing we'll definitely want to talk about is some of the earlier pedals that Electroharmonics went into. But for instance, so since we're giving away the Big Muff Pi, with the Tone Wicker option. So how, when you work on a pedal like that, that's already a classic, it's been out, you know, since the beginning of the days with Electroharmonics, what made you guys decide to change it up, add some few options? Is that something that comes from other artists? Does it come from your customers? How did that come about to make those sort of changes?
Well, for the most part, that actually does come from Mike directly. You know, he'll have an idea for that particular case, the Tone Wicker. You know, he would talk about how when he was working on the original Big Muff with Bob Meyer, who was the original designer of it, Mike would go in there and play with capacitors and tweak it and get the tone just right, you know. And you know, he remembered that before he went in there and started tweaking, that it was very wide open sounding. And so he got the idea of, like, let's take out those capacitors that we put in and, you know, open it up a little bit. And that was sort of the seed for the Big Muff with Tone Wicker. And then a little bit later on, we decided, well, you know, let's take another early Big Muff characteristic, which was being able to switch out the tone control. And, you know, then we put in another switch just to remove tone or bypass the tone. And that's how that pedal came about.
So can you talk about when you guys are designing a new pedal, how does that come about? Is it, as you mentioned, is it Mike's ideas, or is it something you guys come together and you decide to create something new, or are you trying to emulate something? How does that process happen with you guys?
I would say probably 90%, 95% of the time it does come from Mike, and I think that he gets his ideas from meeting people at trade shows, and you know, he reads all the comment cards that we get in, you know, those warranty cards, And so I think he kind of keeps a library of ideas in his head and, you know, and formulates them and eventually, you know, comes out and he directs us on what he wants. At the same time, the engineering group, we keep a running list of things that we think might be a cool product. And at some point, we'll just get together with Mike and go over some ideas. And occasionally, they come to fruition, but not always. I would say the majority of projects are Mike's ideas. And sometimes he'll just come into the engineering room and he'll say, this is what I want, and then he'll leave. And then it's up to us to figure out what it is. Or other times, he's got a lot of... For a particular product, he'll have a lot of ideas and angles on how it should work, and you know we try and meet those goals.
So one of your pedals that you have that I just one of my personal favorites that I just love to hear every time I hear it is the Ravage Sitar. So if you watch the video you guys have online about it, Mike tells a story about how he went to India with his girlfriend and then decided he wanted to have this sitar sound. And is that story is it true, or is it, you know, I mean, is that how he came up with the idea, or is he just kind of having fun with it?
He's having fun with it. That's actually that's actually kind of a particular case where one of our designers said, hey, I got this sitar emulation I'm working on. It's not perfect yet, but do you want to hear it? And so we listened to it, and everybody was, you know, pretty much blown away, even with just the early version of it. And so we said, okay, you know, this is something we gotta advance and take further and try and create a product out of. And we did. And so that is actually one of the special cases where I don't know, maybe Mike did plant a seed at some point a long time ago that hey, it'd be great to have a sitar emulator. You know, I don't know for sure, but I do know that, you know, one day it just sort of showed up, and we took it from there.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing the sounds that come out of that pedal. It's just it's pretty crazy. But I mean, I think a lot of your pedals. I mean, taking, you know, not talking about the, you know, the basics like your fuzzes and your delays and your reverbs. A lot of your pedals seem to be a lot of synthesized and just a lot of crazy wild imagination of what you can do, and it's pretty neat to hear.
Yeah, we do have some great designers and you know, we have some people working specifically in synthesis and different kinds of synthesis, and that, you know, the sitar comes out of that, as well as the Pog and the Hog type pedals, and yeah, it's just it's really exciting stuff, and we have a lot of fun developing it.
So with Electro-Harmonix, the very first pedal that kind of came out was the LPB1, and we've got a clip from Mike talking about that, and then afterwards we've got a couple questions with you regarding that.
One of my co-salesmen at IBM introduced me to a friend of his named Bob Meyer, who is a top inventor at Bell Labs, and I asked him to develop a distortion-free sustainer. So, and then when I went out there one day to check out the prototype, by the way, I was never a guitar player. I was a keyboard player, but I just pluck one note on the guitar. So I went out there to check out the prototype of this distortion-free sustainer, and I saw in front of it was a small little box. So I says, what's this box? He says, well, I didn't realize the guitar input was so low. So I built this, one transistor preamplifier, and I plucked the string, and all of a sudden the amp was loud as hell. Now, back in those days in the 60s, all the guitar amplifiers, you turn them up to 10 and they'd be clean. And so this was with this LPB1, you could like really turn it what would be up to 30. And then if you turned it and it would be clean and loud as hell, or if you turned it up more, it would start to distort the amp. And I said, wow, that's a product. I'm going to make those. So I started making LPB1s. That was named for Linear Power Booster. And that was our first product, the LPB1. And And I sold thousands of them. It ushered in the age of overdrive, and we still sell, large quantities of them even today now, some 44 years later.
It amazes me that not being a guitar player, he's invented so many different amazing things for guitar. I just want to make that comment. But John, I want to ask you a question. With the LPB1, it's 30, almost 40 years old. Is it any different, the one now that you guys make? Did you do any improvements? Is there any difference in the circuitry? Or is it still the same circuit that it was back then?
No, it's actually, pretty much identical to the original. The only difference being, the chassis it's in, and now it's got a foot switch and true bypass and an LED. But other than that, take away those things that, the sort of modern guitar player needs to have, the actual boost part of it is identical. And it's as simple as it can possibly get.
Yeah, it's. I remember when it first came out, we used to use that to push our amps. It was great. And it's amazing a product like that still is viable, after so many years with all the different changes that's happened in music and in equipment. It's still a true test of, how a simple design perseveres, It's great.
Yeah, and I think what the great thing about it is it's about making you louder. And anything that makes you louder as a guitar player has got to be good, right?
Well, there's a few things that still work. The pickup design, basically, whether it's single coil or humbuckers, is an early 50s design. They really haven't made it that much better. They might have given more output. They've been able to make the manufacturing more consistent, but it's still the same design, and it's an older design, but it still works. You know what I mean? It's
yep, absolutely.
That's a tribute to genius. I mean, that truly is genius that it's sustained so long. I got another question for you, kind of a general question. A lot of you have so many. I mean, when I was going through to prepare for this, I went through your website, which is, by the way, www.ehx.com for everybody. And there's just so many pedals. I mean, I knew a lot of your pedals because I've seen them and I've used them, but there's way more than I even realized that you guys had made. But I have a question for you, like with the classic ones, the Small Clone, the Small Stone, are those still analog, or did you, because I remember in our interview with Mike, he mentioned like with the Memory Man, it's digital now. The Electric Mistress, those pedals, are they still the original circuit, or are those been upgraded in a digital one? And also, too, the second question would be, what's your take, analog or digital?
Well, I think as far as the pedals that are reissues, we would mostly have to take it on a case-by-case basis. But if it's a pedal that we consider a reissue, then it's still the same circuit as it was in its original design, or as close as we can possibly make it. So something like the Small Stone, the Small Clone, those are both analog. We actually have many, many pedals that are analog. I would say that we may be at about 50-50 analog digital. Might even go a little bit more towards the analog side. But even the Memory Man, we have many Memory Men.
Okay.
And we have one that's digital. That is true. That's the Stereo Memory Man with Hauser Eye. But the Deluxe Memory Man is still an analog pedal. And we have a few versions of it now. We have with or without tap tempo, essentially. And the version without tap tempo, which we call the XO Memory Man or XO Deluxe Memory Man, that's actually the same circuit as it was in the late 70s.
Okay. Then now, for example, now when we were at the LA Pedal Show, we saw the Epitome, which is one of those multi-pedals where you have the Micropog, the Stereo Electric Mistress, and the Holy Grail Reverb in there all combined in one pedal. Now, is that Electric Mistress, is that digital, or is that analog in that circuit?
That is a digital Electric Mistress. The Stereo Electric Mistress, which is a pedal that we released something like 6 years ago, is a digital pedal. whereas the Deluxe Electric Mistress, which we still manufacture, is an analog pedal.
Oh, okay.
So same name, Electric Mistress, but you know the prefix Stereo Deluxe is different, and one is analog and the other is digital.
Now,
so the entire Epitome pedal is a digital pedal.
It's a okay. Now, are most of the multi pedals, like the Holy Stain, the Worm, the Tone Tattoo, are those digital, or are, do you find you have to make them digital to make them fit in such a small package, or are they still, are any of those analog?
Actually, two out of the three are analog. So the Tone Tattoo is an analog multi-effect, and that was kind of the goal behind it, was let's make a multi-effect pedal that's actually completely analog. You know, we thought that would be fun. It would sound great, and it's different from most or all multi-effect pedals out on the market, which are digital. So we thought that that was a good lead-in for a multi-effect pedal. The Worm, I think you mentioned, that's all analog as well. And then the Holy Stain is actually a hybrid of analog and digital. The fuzz and the distortion circuitry is all analog. And then the reverb and the pitch shift and the tremolo is digital.
Okay, that's. I just want to mention, so if you're not familiar, the Tone Tattoo that John's talking about, it's a metal muff with a neoclone chorus and a memory toy analog delay, which is kind of, for a rock setup, you got your chorus and delay. It's got everything in there. The Worm is a phaser, a tremolo, a vibrato, and a neo-modulated wah, which is kind of an interesting thing. And then the Holy Stain is reverb, pitch shifting, tremolo, fuzz, and drive, overdrive, which, I mean, again, for a person that's not a guitar player, that's a pretty right on the money combination of stuff. I mean, those pedals function. I mean, for a working musician, that's all you need. I mean, that's pretty much it's giving you what you need for playing live. So.
Well, although Mike is not a guitar player, he does have incredible ears, which is, of course, critical. He's got wonderful ears, and he's got good taste in guitar players.
Mm-hmm.
So the company has a number of really good guitar players that, you know, he can trust. He can have them play something, and Mike can listen and you know what he's going to hear out of that guitar player, or even just ask them their opinion, and he trusts them.
So on these multi-effects units that you guys make, do you guys run into issues whether they're analog or analog or digital on mixing those effects, where it causes additional issues with having those in the same pedal?
Yes, absolutely. The Tone Tattoo comes to mind immediately, where we ran into the problem where the memory toy, when we took it in and out of bypass, we weren't getting unity gain. And we didn't, you know, foresee that problem, but immediately we realized we have to have some kind of gain or volume control on the memory toy. So we did add a gain control, and so, you know, the guitar player can tune in their unity for the memory toy. That was something we didn't realize. Another thing we didn't realize was that the metal muff and the memory toy didn't play that well together. And the metal muff, essentially, when your note dies out, it's trying to keep that note going as long as it possibly can. And for the memory toy, that kind of drowned out your echoes, because now it was delaying this drawn-out note that was, you know, half hum and half note. And it drowned everything out, and you weren't really getting too many repeats out of the memory toy when the metal muff was engaged. So that was the beginning of the gate section that we added to the metal muff, and we put a little sort of secret circuitry into the memory toy that when the metal muff's engaged, it changes a few things, and when it's not engaged, it changes them back, and you would never notice it, but we had to put that in there so that they could play nice together.
Hmm.
Very interesting. So, out of curiosity, would someone have that similar issue you describe if they had your metal muff and a memory toy by themselves, the individual boxes?
Sad to say, but yes, they probably would.
Okay. I want to talk about some of your newer generation pedals, like the Hog 2 and the Super Ego and the Next Step effects. So I want to start with those. One of the things you'll see if you watch your videos, your guys' demos on the internet, you'll see almost kind of like hacks for those pedals. They're, you know, you can describe. I'll have you describe more of kind of how they work and what's unique about them. But I'm out of curiosity. Can you talk about those hacks? Were those intentional, or are they just something you guys found on the side?
Actually, I'm not sure which hacks you're talking
about. Oh, okay. In the sense of like, if you when you calibrate the pedal, if you turn it on its side, you get different type of square waves and something, and different types of sounds that maybe weren't necessarily intended.
Right, that's true. Those things were sometimes we do find them in engineering, you know, before it's released, or maybe one of the guitar players at EH will find it. To be honest, with the Next Step pedals and the Crying Tone, we really didn't notice that stuff. We figured, you know, you probably could do some fun stuff with the calibration, but we were working so hard to try and make the calibration perfect for normal use that we didn't concentrate too hard or look too deeply into alternative uses for what you could do with that calibration button. And Bill Rupert, who does videos for us and advises us on different aspects of pedals at times, did come up with those sort of hacks on the calibration, on like, hey, you could do this cool thing with calibration there. You know, make it into a square wave, you know, on-off sort of sound. You know, he came up with a lot of those.
So with the Next Step pedals, can you talk about kind of the idea of those and kind of where that came from and what issues you guys were trying to solve with those pedals?
Yeah, Mike was talking to our head designer, David Cockrell, about how he wanted a wah pedal without the moving parts, without the pots, preferably not using optos or magnets, which were things that we looked at some point. And, you know, he thought about that for a little while and eventually came back with the technology that's in the Next Step pedals. And he built first a controller to sort of like an expression pedal, essentially, to, you know, display the technology and for us to fool around with it. And then around that, he built up the wah circuit, which is essentially what's in the Crying Tone at the moment. So, you know, Mike did go out and say to the engineers, or specifically David Cockrell, hey, this is what I want. And then eventually, you know, at some point later, it might have been a year or two later, we started playing around with the technology.
Yeah, they're very cool. I mean, and now you guys just introduced a new pedalboard cradle for them, which is neat to see.
Yep, that's right. That should be shipping pretty soon. I think we have everything in stock that we need. And it's really simple, and it's actually not going to cost very much money. I think the street price is about $15, maybe even a little less. And it's really just a piece of plastic that you can Velcro to a pedal board, and we provide the Velcro as well. And then there's a long piece of Velcro to keep the pedal attached when you're traveling. And otherwise, the pedal is still free to move around, but now it moves around constrained in the cradle.
Very cool. Now, I just want to remind our listeners that we do have an open line, 323-203-0815. You can call at any point, 323-203-0815, to ask your questions to John, and we'll do our best to take the calls. We're going to be taking a break here pretty soon.
What we'll do is, when we come back, I'm going to play another clip of Mike talking about one of the first fuzzes he made, even before the Big Muff, and then we'll get back into the show. So should we go ahead?
Yep, go ahead now? And take a break.
All right, we'll be right back.
You are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
The Flow here. You're listening to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show on latalkradio.com.
So there's this guy on the music street in New York City that repaired the amps. They were about, in those days, there were about 25 different music stores all on this one street. He was making fuzz tones one at a time. And he said, "Hey, Mike, you want to come in with me?" So I said, "Hey, sure." So I went in with him, and then all of a sudden he dropped out and disappeared. And I was left alone with these fuzz tones, his design. I didn't actually make them. What I did is I brought them to a contract house that built them. And the founder of Guild Guitars, a guy that eventually died in a plane crash, flying his own planes, he wanted to buy them all for me. And so I made a deal with him. And by this time now that I was making these, Hendrix was hot. And everybody wanted to sound like Hendrix, so he decided to call them Foxy Ladies. So I was making these Foxy Ladies. Rock and roll!
All right, that's the sound. All right, so that signals that the contest has been closed, and we have a winner for the winner of the Electro Harmonics Big Muff Pie with Tone Wicker. And that actually was from my upcoming demo, me playing the Big Muff there. So the winner is Sam Knack, K-N-A-A-K. He is the winner of the pedal, so we'll be contacting him after the show.
Congratulations, Sam.
And that pedal is autographed by Mike Matthews, so very, very cool. So, John, so let's talk about the Hog 2. That is a combination of, I think, of a lot of your guys' other classic pedals. Can you talk about how that came about and tell us what's new and great about that pedal?
Well, the Hog 2 is very similar to the Hog. And, we basically built upon what the Hog was. And first thing we did was improve the DSP in there, so it is actually a digital pedal. And, of course, the Hog was built upon the Pog. So that's kind of the history there. And the differences between the Hog 2 and the Hog, I think, would start with the clarity of the voices. In some of the A-B tests that I've done between the Hog and the Hog 2, it almost sounds like the Hog is out of focus. It's kind of, I don't want to say fuzzy, that's not the right word, and it would be taken out of context with guitar. It's almost like the audio is not in focus, it's not very clear, and then when you plug into the Hog 2, it's like, oh, a veil is lifted and the voices come through much better. And then the other really cool thing about the Hog 2 is we expanded the number of presets up to 100. If you have the added preset accessory that we sell with it, and the Hog 2 and the Hog are such complex pedals that presets are really necessary, and the Hog only could handle 6 presets, so Hog 2 having up to 100 is really wonderful and great for the serious Hog players out there. And I think anybody that has a Hog or a Hog 2 is a serious player. They're sort of our top of the line pedal, if you will.
So, sorry to interrupt, John. We actually have We have some callers, so I want to grab one of them while we can. So,
welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. Can we have your name and where you're calling from?
Tim Harmon. I'm calling from Bloomington, Indiana.
Oh, glad to have you on the show. Do you have a question for our guest?
I have a couple questions. One more general, and the other pretty specific.
Go ahead.
The general question has to do with the surprising bonuses that seem to come in EH pedals and have from the beginning, where there's some feature that no one expected that seems a little wacky, such as the early modulation reverb on the Holy Grail. And if you go something I didn't expect. A little wild. Those things you can't get in any other pedal. My question is, are those ideas that come from Mike, or is there a company culture that kind of concentrates on building in those little surprise bonuses?
Yeah, I would say that that's part of the company culture. That's actually a great question, because we have talked about in engineering how we like to have, you know, at least one knob or one control go a little bit further than it should be allowed to go. You know, comparing to something like Boss pedals, which seem restrained, you know, we like to take some parameters a little further, and that is something that may not be in every pedal that we sell and manufacture, but it is something that we think about and try and exploit when we can, when it makes sense, or when it's cool, basically.
Is that a tradition that's been carried down from something Mike did years ago that just became a company culture? Because, I mean, it's been there almost from the beginning.
Yeah, I can't say what was going on in the beginning, but we certainly, as engineers, noticed it and you know, kind of jumped on it and have enjoyed keeping that tradition alive as best we can.
John, do you think? Let me interrupt real quick. John, do you think that maybe the designers like David Cockerell and Bob Meyer, do you think they had a lot to do with it?
I mean,
are they that way? They're like, hey, we could do this. It's cool. Let's try that.
I think that in general, they probably left some stuff in, not knowing, you know, whether or not a guitarist would like it, or maybe, you know, probably a lot of the times they would have an early prototype, and they would say, oh, well, I'll take care of that, or something like that, and of course, everybody loved it and said, no, leave it alone. Don't touch that. You know, don't let the don't bring the feedback on a Deluxe Memory Man back a little bit. You know, it's gotta oscillate and run away.
Yeah, because you're free to make it sound horrible if you want to, and other pedals stop you from doing that. But there's some creativity out there at the edge that otherwise you don't get.
Absolutely.
So Tim, you had a second question. You said.
Yeah, my specific question relates to the cathedral in the delay mode, or what you call the echo mode. It seems that the first delay, or the first repeat, is at the time that I've tapped, and every successive repeat is at half that time, the ping-ponging left to right. Is that intentional, or is there something wrong with my pedal?
are you using both outputs? Are you using the left and right output, or just the left output?
No, I'm using both. My purpose for it was that it was stereo.
Yeah, the way it should work is that the left output would be at your original tap tempo, and then the right output would be at the same echo, and then the left would come back in. And it sounds like that maybe it's not coming out the right output, because what happens is if you're just listening to the left, you'll get the first repeat sounding normal, and then every subsequent repeat will be two times as long. But the right output should be filling in.
I'm going in. And maybe you're right. Maybe it's twice the time, and I've mixed it up in describing it. But I'm using it stereo in and stereo out.
I think it's still ping-ponging whether you're going in just mono left in or left and right in. I think it's still going to ping pong if both outputs are being used.
I know it's different from other delays that I've used, where if I'm using a left or right ping pong delay and I tap the tempo, it retains that same time. It's just that one comes from the left and the other comes from the right. And this seems like the two are offset from each other. I'm still getting a ping pong, but I have to play with my tap time in order to ultimately get the rhythm that I want.
And I'll have to check that tomorrow.
Yeah.
It could be that something is messed up with one of the jacks, where the DSP checks to see if the right input and the right output are actually plugged in or not, and possibly thinks that one of them is not plugged in.
I'm definitely getting stereo out of the pedal. I mean, they're going left to right. So the pedal's doing what it wants, but the processor doesn't realize it.
Yeah. I'll check that tomorrow.
Yeah, if you want, John, cool. If you want to email me, and then Tim, and then if you want to check our Facebook site, or and I'll try to get you a post up there for his response so you can actually see what he said.
Great. Appreciate it.
Great. Thanks for calling in, Tim.
Thanks.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Quick question for you. You're talking about you guys were one of the first people that actually made like floor pedal synthesizers. And I wanted to ask you a little bit. I think some of the effects that I've seen on the Hog 2, I know you had the micro synthesizer, the Super Ego, which was basically a sample and hold. The Hog, is that using an oscillator? Is the guitar controlling an oscillator? Or are you taking the guitar tone and messing with it and then filtering it and so forth like a regular synthesizer? Can you?
What we're essentially doing in the Hog, we're doing a bunch of things, actually. There's so much going on. But when we talk about the voices in the Hog 2, we're taking that original guitar signal and we're creating octaves or harmonics out of that original guitar signal.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens is because there's so many voices, it ends up being like an additive synthesizer.
Mm-hmm.
So which is then put into the filter or the envelope generator on the amplitude. So the core of the Hog is that each voice is generated from the original guitar signal.
Okay. Now, like for example, with the micro synthesizer, is that an actual synthesizer, and you're doing some type of control voltage thing to it?
Yeah, that is. Well, no, let me think about that for a second.
Okay.
That's actually we're actually doing something kind of similar, but fully in the analog domain, where. So there's four voices. There's guitar, which is your original signal, and then there's sub octave, square wave, and octave up.
Mm-hmm.
The sub octave is generated directly from the guitar signal, and you know we're doing a sort of basic sub octave generation from that, and then the square wave is also directly made from the guitar signal, where we're taking, you know, the guitar signal, which for the most part kind of looks like a sine wave with some added harmonics.
Right.
And we're just slamming that to make it into a square wave. And then the octave up is what we're doing something called full wave rectification to double the frequency. So even in the case of the microsynth, all four voices that are generated are actually from the original guitar signal. It's not going through a frequency to voltage converter and then triggering a VCO.
That makes sense, because I've used control voltage synthesizer guitar setups and they always had that lag, and that makes sense. That's why yours always tracked really good.
Yeah.
We have another caller. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. Can you give me your name and where you're calling from?
Yeah, this is John in Pomona.
Hey, John. Do you have a question for our guest?
Yes, I do. I have a Deluxe Memory Boy and the Expression Pedal Mode. I've bought a couple different of the recommended Expression Pedals on the list, and I really can't get the thing to work properly. I know that it's not like it's totally shut off, but the amount of control over any of the parameters is just completely limited.
Okay, let's just take one of the parameters. How about feedback? The way it works is that the heel position of the expression pedal is going to be equivalent to the feedback knob being on zero, you know, no feedback. And then the toe position is going to be equivalent to the current position of the feedback knob. So if you wanted to get the full range of the feedback knob. You would have to turn the feedback knob up to 100% to so that the toe position of the expression pedal would be equivalent to feedback at 100%. So do you know offhand or remember if you're setting whichever parameter you're controlling with the expression pedal to a high value so that it gives it some range to work with?
No, I haven't done that before, and thanks for answering that question. Yeah, I'll try that out tonight. I live in a big place. I can crank up in here. But another question. I'm seeing all these new EHX products come out. I think you probably make over 10, maybe less than 20 overdrive distortion units. There are a lot of small companies that guys are just kind of ripping off some of your classic pedals and making a decent living at it. Why not release and reissue some of the classic muffs from the past and, probably make a shite load of money off it?
So I think you're referring to like the Triangle muff and the Ram's Head, as a couple examples.
People are making a living off that right now, and you guys should be cashing in.
Well, I mean, you're probably right about that. And to be honest, it's something that we have talked about and experimented with doing. And I guess all I can say is at the moment we don't have it ready. That we haven't found the circuit or circuits yet that we're happy with.
So to make a big production run of that is probably harder than just these little garage shops that are doing it?
Maybe, but not necessarily. I think part of the issue is that aside from the fact that many of the key components are obsolete now and hard to come by, there's just a lot of opinions at EH on what is the best big muff, I don't know. I don't really have a great answer for you, other than it's certainly something we talk about pretty often, but we haven't, been able to come up with the circuit yet.
Well, thanks a lot.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks, John, for calling in. So. John, our guest, I wanted to talk to you about something that I think is really, really, really neat about your guys' company. You guys put together, I believe, assemble and then you QC all your pedals in the U.S. So can you talk about how important that is in keeping your quality control up and, continuing what you guys create and envision as engineers and what Mike has envisioned?
It's very important, the QC process, and obviously, what we make is all about the sound, so it's pretty easy to go and start changing components, substitute components because you ran out of a capacitor, for example. So, we find it really important to make sure that the pedals don't lose their sound quality, the original sound that we designed in. So that's a big, big reason why we keep the QC and the assembly in New York. We want to have tight control over that. And for us, the sound is the most important thing. It's the number one priority on the pedals that we sell. So we want to keep, some control over that, as much control as possible.
Well, and personally, I have to say that, one of the greatest things you guys have printed on all your pedals is made in New York City, USA. I think it's just fantastic for a large manufacturing company to be doing that.
We're pretty proud of that, yeah. Thank you.
I just want to interject real quickly. We talked a little bit about quality control, and when you listen to the full interview with Mike Matthews, he talks about those issues, not just with the pedals, but with making tubes. There's a whole section on, how he got involved into making the tubes and working with a factory in Russia, and it's really exciting stuff. So that's going to be on our Flow Guitar Enthusiast webpage. So check that out. It's, you can download it, and it's really interesting.
So we're getting close to the end of the show, so let me ask you some, you know, just, you know, I don't know, some real quick questions. So with all the massive amount of pedals that Electro-Harmonix makes, what is the pedal out there that you think is kind of the hidden gem that may not be the most popular Big Muff or you know, Holy Grail? What's the one that you think out there is just the hidden gem that you think people should check out?
As far as hidden gems go, I probably would choose either of our Germanium pedals, the Germanium Overdrive or the Germanium 4 Big Muff. I actually use the Germanium Overdrive quite a bit, and I think of it as my sort of secret sound, that it's my secret weapon when I'm trying to record a guitar, for example, and it's not quite coming out right. I'll usually bust that out, and I don't know, just puts that just enough sweetness on the sound to get it where I want it to be. So that, and I really like the Germanium 4 Big Muff as well. I haven't used it quite as much. It's newer, but that would be it. The Germanium Overdrive in the 4 Big Muff.
Yeah, it looks like the Big Muff is actually, it looks like two pedals all in one, right? And you can probably stack them, looks like.
Yeah, exactly. It's overdrive on the left and distortion on the right, and they could both be on or one or the other.
Very cool.
And the distortion's first in the circuit, and then that goes into the overdrive.
Okay, and then...
I want to interject. Both of those are Bob Meyer designs.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, cool.
And so out of all the pedals, which one did you help design that you're most proud of, that you just brag to your friends about?
Well, there might be a couple. I guess I'd have to say the Holy Grail. That was my first design for Electro-Harmonix.
Wow.
And
it's a good first design.
yeah, exactly. So, you know, it's definitely the best selling out of any of the ones I've designed, and so I'm pretty proud of that. And you know, I hear people talking about Holy Grail or see it on people's pedal boards, and it's, you know, kind of crazy. Wow, I actually did that. I can't believe it. I'm also very proud of the Deluxe Memory Boy, which the last caller just asked about, and the Deluxe Memory Man with Tap Tempo. Both of those I designed, and I'm just very proud of them.
One last question. Tell us, you know, how people can find out about Electro-Harmonix, and tell us about, you know, where they can go to learn more about them.
Well, our website is definitely the best place to start. EHX.com, as you guys had mentioned earlier in the show, and we have videos for nearly every pedal on our website. Another great place would be YouTube. Type in Electro-Harmonix, and, you know, I think a whole range of videos, some from us, some from users, will come up. And, you know, there's some great user videos out there, and you can hear our pedals in action, and it's a lot of fun.
Yes, and there'll be one coming up in the next couple days.
Well, I'm excited to see it now.
And also too, there you can follow them on Twitter at EHX, and if you type in Electro-Harmonix with an X on Facebook, they have their Facebook page. Please go there and like their page. It's pretty cool.
Yes, so John, thank you so much for spending the hour with us. I know that you are on the East Coast, so it's a little bit late there for you. So thank you so much for spending this hour with us.
Yeah, we appreciate it.
And definitely we want to thank Mike Matthews for taking the time to go through the what is close to about a 45-minute interview with him that we'll have up on our site soon. And it'll be on
Electro-Harmonix.
Well,
thank you very much. We really do appreciate it, and we're very grateful that you had us on.
Thank you so much. So for next week, we have, as Jeff had mentioned earlier in the show, Jim Stuppelfield, from the guitar player from Incendio, and his own solo group, Guitar Exotica, I believe is what he calls it. And he's a fantastic nylon string, gut string player, and ridiculous regular electric player. So it'll be a great show. He'll have some of his clips. It'll be a great show next week.
Good night, everybody. Thanks again, John.
Thank you.